Call the meeting of the Higher Education and Career Readiness Policy and Finance Committee to order. And we do have an official quorum, although we do have some folks still absent, but we'll proceed in the interest of time. So today we have a couple of items on our schedule. First, a report from Lutheran Social Services, and then we'll hear from some students, I believe. So are the representatives from Social Services, or from Lutheran Social Services here? I see they are. We were part of a pilot program for counseling debt for students, and we're anxious to hear how that went. So welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself and then begin.
Thank you, Chair Harness. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kate Rissavy. I'm the Senior Director of Financial Services at Lutheran Social Service of Minnesota. For 150 years, LSS has been providing services to people with disabilities, older adults, children, youth, and families. More than 2,300 LSS employees and volunteers provide services in 300 communities statewide and in all 87 counties. LSS began offering budget and debt counseling in 1987 and is the largest nonprofit provider of financial counseling and financial education in Minnesota, providing budget, debt, credit counseling, foreclosure prevention, debt management plans to more than 10,000 families annually. LSS Financial Counseling has 11 service sites in Minnesota, one in Wisconsin, and serves clients in all 50 states through phone and internet-based services. All LSS counselors are certified by the National Foundation for Credit Counseling. In 2012, LSS Financial Counseling was selected for a grant from the Center for Excellence in Financial Counseling at the University of Missouri. During the pilot period of 2013-2014, LSS Financial Counseling served 558 clients for student loan repayment counseling at several Minnesota colleges. Based on the significant demand for this service and the outcome achieved, in May 2015, the Minnesota State Legislature created a two-year pilot to serve Minnesotans struggling with student loan payments. LSS was selected through a competitive request for proposals process and finalized the contract with the Minnesota Office of Higher Education on October 15, 2015. Today I will review how the program works and the outcomes to date. Borrowers are referred to the service by financial aid offices at campuses, credit unions or banks, family and friends of people served, or through other outreach. Borrowers meet in person or over the phone with a certified financial counselor who's received intensive training in both the technical aspects of distressed student loans and behavior change counseling techniques. The initial session is scheduled for 1.5 hours with a one-hour follow-up session if needed. Counseling is provided to borrowers regarding their complete financial situation, pulling credit reports, deep budgeting, addressing all income expenses and debts, including housing and credit card debt, as well as understanding all federal, state, and private student loans owed by the borrower and the repayment options available to them. These are sometimes complex and nuanced situations and options. Then an action plan is developed that includes sustainable changes in financial practices that prioritizes student loan repayment. As a result of the legislation passed in 2015, 981 borrowers were served between October 15, 2015 and November 30, 2016 from 60 counties in Minnesota. 590 of the 594 who came in as current on their student loans were able to remain current on their loans with counseling. 193 of the 387 delinquent borrowers brought over $9 million of student loans into good standing with counseling. So that means that 50% of the borrowers who came in with delinquent student loans are back on track and current with their student loans. 97% developed a monthly budget plan. 86% feel more confident regarding their repayment options. And 80% say payments are more affordable a year after implementing the changes that were made with the counseling. The report you have received provides additional information about the content of counseling selection sessions, and metrics we use to evaluate. One learning from the pilot, there was a barrier for some borrowers that the original pilot limited access to those who attended a Minnesota institution. 114 Minnesota residents who sought counseling attended schools in nearby states. We did, and the most common, frequent state was Wisconsin that they attended schools. We did serve those, we just were not able to use the appropriation for that service. I'd like to share one example of someone with a complex situation who benefited from student loan repayment counseling. This is also included in one of the examples in the report. Heather, and the name has been changed to protect confidentiality, is a 36-year-old from Crookston, is going through a divorce. The mortgage is in her husband's name only, and he's not paying child support. Heather is working with an LSS housing counselor on this issue. She recently received notice that her wages will be garnished for her student loans. Heather is working with a financial counselor to request a hearing to prevent the garnishment, consolidate the student loans, and put them into an income-driven repayment plan, which will keep them in good standing and allow her to avoid public assistance and provide stability for her three children. Based on the need we have seen throughout the state and the successful track record we have had in getting borrowers back on track, we hope the legislature will continue to support this model. By providing borrowers with the information needed, we can prevent student loan debt from inhibiting the growth of Minnesota's economy and derailing the borrower's life goals for which they sought higher education in the first place. We would like to thank Representative Haley for authoring a bill this session, which would provide continued funding for this service. Thank you also to the many other members who have signed on as co-authors. We hope to have the opportunity to testify on that bill in the near future. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to the benefits of this service today.
Thank you very much. Did you have something you want to add? Again, identify yourself.
Yes, please, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tricia Grimes, and I'm a volunteer with Lutheran Social Service. Just one short minute with a little background on me. Years ago, I was a nonpartisan legislative fiscal analyst working on higher education at the Minnesota Legislature, like Ken Savory is now. I then worked for many years at the State Office of Higher Education, and I finished my career as the legislative liaison there. Then 2 years ago, I retired. Now, one of the other areas of responsibility I had at the Office of Higher Education was student loan issues. And one of the things that frustrated me greatly was the number of Minnesota borrowers who would default on their federal student loans, when nearly all of those defaults could have been prevented if the borrowers had just understood what their options were. The federal government, since 2007, has offered a repayment plan called income-based repayment, where it's a percentage of their income. And so if the borrower's income is very low, their payments are very low. Surprising number of borrowers do not know about this option. Borrowers who are delinquent in repaying their student loans have their credit scores drop by 100 points or more, according to the credit rating agencies. The average credit score for Minnesota is about 720. If your credit score drops down to 620 because you're late in paying your student loans, and this is just late, this is not in default, you can have a hard time getting a car loan, renting an apartment, sometimes even getting a job. Default is when a borrower doesn't pay on their student loans for 9 months or more. And a default is more than 100 points on the credit score. In Minnesota, for the latest year for which there is data, 14,000 Minnesota borrowers defaulted on their student loans. And as I said, most of those could have been prevented if they'd been on an income-based repayment plan. Another thing that the student loan counseling helps with is borrowers who did already default on their loan, and they're having trouble with their credit, and they assume that there's nothing they can do about their defaulted loan. In fact, they can rehabilitate their defaulted loans. They can get on an income-based repayment plan and pay for 9 to 12 months, and then their credit score starts to reflect the fact that they are in the process of rehabilitating that loan, and it starts to have much less impact on their credit. So this is my volunteer priority. When I was retiring and I learned that Lutheran Social Service, with its excellent excellent certified credit counselors was offering student loan counseling. I called them up and asked them if they would like me to volunteer to help with this effort because I think it's so important. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We'd be happy to take any questions.
All right. Thank you very much. I think you've covered it, but you're not, they're not reducing, or, I mean, the debt is there and it's just finding a way to pay for it. Is that correct?
No. Chair Narnas, yes, that is correct. This isn't a loan forgiveness program. This is just helping the borrowers understand in their situation what repayment options are available to them. So it's looking at all of that.
Okay. Questions?
Mr. Chairman, if I could just clarify one thing. We did receive an appropriation of $150,000 a year in the 2015 legislature. That was one-time funding. And so the bill will seek continuation of the funding.
Okay, thank you. Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You noted that there's barriers for some people to participate in the program. Were you able to serve everybody that came in and wanted your services?
Chair Narnas.
I need you to pronounce your name again. I'm not sure.
Kate Rissavi.
Okay. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Narnas, Representative. We did not screen out someone who wasn't eligible under this because a lot of times we didn't know what school that they came in for until they were meeting with the counselor. And it's as part of our mission, we also provided that service, but we're not able to use the appropriation. So we did serve people who came in and didn't turn them away for because they didn't go to school in Minnesota.
Representative Pryor.
And just to be clear, though, that so that I'm understanding that you didn't have to turn anybody away because you ran out of money and didn't have enough people power to counsel everybody, that everybody that knew about the program that came to you was able to get the help that they were seeking.
Go ahead.
Chair and Representative, that is correct. At this time, during this pilot period, we didn't turn anybody away for that.
Representative Lane, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not a question, but more just a comment. I guess I just appreciate the work that you all are doing. Before I was elected, was working with a nonprofit credit counseling organization, and it wasn't Lutheran Social Services, but, we were often trying to find ways how we could get onto college campuses or even get into high schools and talk with seniors about this type of thing, not even just with the debt, helping manage debt, but more so the monthly budgets and cash management and getting ahead of it. So, I'm glad to see this is continuing to go forward. So thanks for your work. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Did a good job.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here, and good luck as we move forward. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair.
Before we have some students, I do have some minutes here I forgot to talk about earlier, so we'd like to have a motion to approve the minutes from January 25th.
I'll make that motion.
Representative Albright moves. Questions? Discussion? All those in favor of the minutes of January the 25th, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And the minutes are now officially approved. Next, we have some students here, I believe. We have a Joseph Wolf. No? There's no such thing as a Joseph Wolf? Oh, okay. All right. All right. And then we have Ivo Hussein, is that correct?
Yep.
So you two are going to start?
Yes, we are.
All right.
All right.
And tell me about, well, first of all, your name and then who you represent, where you're from.
Sounds good. We're representing Students United. Good afternoon, Chair Norris and committee members. My name is Joseph Wolf, and I serve as the State Chair for Students United, formerly known as the Minnesota State University Student Association, or MSUSA. I am also a student at Minnesota State University Mankato. Thank you for inviting me to the committee to present today. I am excited to share our legislative priorities with you and also answer any questions you have about Students United. Students United is a completely student-run organization that has existed for almost 50 years. The purpose of Students United is to bring the thoughts, opinions, and personal stories of students to legislators. Students United is able to bring student views and positions directly to Minnesota State, the state legislature, and members of Congress. Also, Students United has 7 scholarship programs, and last year we awarded over $36,000 to students. On February 16th, Students United will hold our annual Advocacy Day, where students from each of our universities will come to the Capitol and meet with legislators, hopefully many of you. This session, our legislative agenda, includes affordability, specifically urging you to honor Minnesota State Statute 135A.01, which says the legislature will provide 67% of the funding for public post-secondary education. We believe this additional funding would reduce tuition, increase retention, and lower student loan debt. Students United is also working for increased funding for the state grant and Minnesota State's bonding request. Many state university students come from low-income backgrounds, and in 2016, 26% of state university students had enough financial aid to be Pell eligible. Many of my friends and classmates take as many credits as they can in order to graduate on time, and most work one or two part-time jobs, and some even work 40 hours a week or more. Many get little or no family assistance, and many of my classmates can't afford every required textbook, so they make do with only the cheaper ones, or they don't buy the textbooks at all. Some students cannot even meet basic needs, and we have food shelves on many of our campuses. Because of this, students have to borrow as much as it takes to complete their degree to set them on the right path for their career. Despite taking steps to afford college through work and financial aid, the average Minnesota State University student graduates with $31,579 in student loan debt. But it is not uncommon for state university graduates to leave our institutions with over $40,000 or $50,000 in debt. I personally am above the Minnesota State student debt average and owe $39,600 in student loan debt. In 2015, I organized and coordinated the group of Minnesota State University students who walked 142 kilometers from Mankato to the state capitol to urge legislators to support the $142 million request 2 years ago. We did that walk because we knew that tuition and debt are serious barriers for access and retention. We need your help to make state universities affordable for all students. Thank you for your work for students, and I have asked one of our board members to share with you their story.
Before that begins, remind me again, where are you in school? You graduate now this spring?
Yep. I go to school at Minnesota State University, Mankato, majoring in geography, and I graduate here in May.
Okay. And I think I have a picture with you on the steps of the Capitol.
I believe, yes.
I just had to walk down the steps.
Yep. All right.
My pleasure to do that. So.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Evo, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I want to thank you, Chair Nornes, and the committee for allowing me to speak to you today. My name is Evo Hussein, and I'm the student body president at Metropolitan State University. My story is lengthy because of the many layers and moving parts, but here's a snippet. I was born and raised in St. Paul, Minnesota, to loving parents who are also proud Oromo immigrants. I am the oldest of my siblings. Growing up, I watched my parents better their lives through an education. For as long as I can remember, my parents took turns going to school and raising me and my siblings, while also working full-time and somehow still managing to have time to be present in our lives and our community. Attending college was not a choice. Instead, it was a matter of where I'd go. During the last 2 years of high school, I participated in PSEO at Metro State. However, my Metro State experience began long before then. Both of my parents attended Metro State. When it came time to choose a college to attend, I initially chose Metro because it was relatively affordable and right in my backyard. It was also familiar, and it felt like a second home. I've worked many jobs to help make ends meet and provide for my education. I have been a barista since high school, and I have worked as a babysitter, tutor, and currently as a PCA. I don't receive any financial help from my family. My family couldn't help much because there are many mouths to feed, and both my parents have a large sum of student debt. Both my parents are also in graduate school and will be completing their doctorates in their respective fields this spring, so they already have their own financial burdens. I'm currently a sophomore and attend school full-time, work two jobs, participate in student government and Students United, and I'm actively involved in the various communities I belong to. I'm currently planning to double major in biology and chemistry at Metro State. With my degrees, I then plan to further my education by attending medical school and then going on to become a pediatric surgeon. I am the product of not one, but two Metro State success stories, and if my parents' needs weren't satisfied, I wouldn't be here before you all today. I have experienced firsthand the drastic difference an education can provide. Today, I testify for the most forgotten communities in the state of Minnesota. At Metro State and all across the state, we are able to educate those who need an education the most, such as working families and disadvantaged communities that are left behind because of their race, gender, sexual orientation, creed, disabilities, or whatever else it may be. Barriers like tuition, textbook affordability, support services, career readiness, training, and networking opportunities are problems that affect students across the state. The communities I just mentioned, it's the reason why they don't complete their degrees.
Wow. So when do you have fun? Do you have any time off?
Occasionally.
I'm very impressed, not only with your story, but your parents still advancing too through higher education. That's fantastic. So questions from members of either of these two? Quiet group. So you did well. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have Minda Nelson. Did I do that right? Is that Will sitting in the back? You can just stay there. We'll call on you in a few minutes. Okay. Got Minda and someone else.
Angelique McDonald.
Okay. Welcome.
Chairman, welcome. As I mentioned, my name is Angelique McDonald, Mr. Chair, Representatives. I am the Director of Government Relations for Minnesota State College Student Association. We are here today to just give you a brief overview of our legislative agenda, which you should have a copy of, and it has been designed and implemented by our students. And in addition to Minda today, seated we have Brett Underdahl from South Central College, and we have Tavian Tran from Century College. Take it away, Minda.
Chair Norins, committee members, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak today. For the record, my name is Minda Nelson. I'm with the Minnesota State College Student Association, or MSCSA. MSCSA works on behalf of 180,000 students attending our 48 community and technical colleges across the state in every single region. We are committed to driving change in higher education by advocating for accessible, quality, and affordable higher education in Minnesota. We are here today just to introduce ourselves and to bring the committee's attention on our commitment to higher education affordability. I want to thank every single member of this committee for the tuition cut that was passed last session. It has greatly assisted all of our students. Your attention to our commitment to higher education and affordability is amazing. Students are now paying 1% less than they did 4 years ago. It is our hope that this legislature will grant a 1% tuition reduction on tuition for students in the associate system again, specifically those attending community and technical colleges, as they will make up as much as 42% of Minnesota's college students. The 1% tuition cut for me this year, because I'm only a part-time student, saved me $47. That may not seem like much to many people, but that is about two tanks of gas or 2 weeks of me choosing to drive to school compared to biking, and biking 10.7 miles to class isn't really that exciting, so thank you for that. Low tuition is the best form of financial aid for our students. We are greatly concerned with the rising costs of higher education and our students' ability to afford completing their programs. Minnesota is still ranked third in the nation for highest tuition, and some of our campuses are seeing a decline in enrollment and completion rates, largely due to the costs associated to attending their institution. We also know that high tuition costs drive many students to seek their education in different states, primarily North Dakota and Wisconsin. who received between 11 and 14,000 Minnesotan students each in 2016, according to the U.S. Department of Education. In 2016, the College Affordability Diagnosis in Minnesota, which was put forward by Penn State, showed an alarming number of students of two-year public institutions having major issues. For families who made $48,000 or less per year, students enrolled in two-year colleges are actually paying more than those who attend the University of Minnesota. And that is after financial aid is applied. So we're taking out more loans and paying more out of pocket for an education that only hits the associate's level. We urge you to make college affordability for Minnesota's community and technical colleges a priority for the upcoming session. Minnesota spends 36% less than the national average on its community and technical colleges, according to the Midwest Higher Education Compact. We are asking for your support by reducing the 1% tuition and to increase state funding for the Minnesota state system. That cut will help encourage more students to enroll in college and to bring back students to complete their degrees. In order for us to meet our workforce needs, it's imperative that our colleges become more affordable for all Minnesotans and that the cost of attendance not be a barrier. The Education Commission on the States estimates that Minnesota will need 440,000 more residents with at least an associate's degree by the year 2025 to meet our future workforce demands. We look forward to being at the table in discussions and in working groups to address this issue for our students and future leaders of Minnesota. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Questions of these two? And remind us where you're attending school again?
I currently attend Century College. I graduated with my first associates at Anoka Ramsey on Cambridge campus last year.
McDonald?
My first bachelor's was from St. Cloud State University, my second from the University of Minnesota, and my master's from the University of Minnesota.
Oh.
And I do have debt.
Well, that's not a surprise.
No.
Well, congratulations to both of you. Thank you for being here.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you've covered it because there's no questions. So thank you. Thank you very much. All right. Well, am I pronouncing your name right? Was it
Dahman? Right.
Dahman?
Dahman, yeah. Will Dahman.
Okay. Will, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Norness and committee. I've met a lot of you already, and I wanted to first start out with a couple of shout-outs, one to Representative Christensen, because my freshman year I was in the student government with Representative Christensen at the University of Minnesota. Also, a shout-out to Representative Omar, who was recently elected to represent University of Minnesota Twin Cities students, so thank you for that. Again, my name is Will Dahman. I'm from Annandale, Minnesota. I'm a senior at the Carlson School of Management studying Human Resources and Industrial Relations. In May, I will be going to work at U.S. Bank headquarters in downtown Minneapolis, and I'm really excited to be doing that. One thing about me is that I am a full Pell Grant and Minnesota State Grant recipient, and that is one of the only reasons I'm able to attend the University of Minnesota. Frankly, when I was deciding on schools, at first I wanted to be one of those kids that gets far away from the parents, goes whether it's out east, out west, to Wisconsin. But as the financials of college started coming more and more to the forefront for me, the University of Minnesota became such a clear option. One thing that I think that Minnesotans aren't exactly taught when we're young is how amazing the university is, and especially how great the university has become over these past few years. One of my favorite things is the amount of opportunities that are available to students at the university. For me, I think a couple of experiences that I know I wouldn't have gotten anywhere else is I was able to meet Condoleezza Rice when she visited. I met President Clinton when he visited. And actually this past year, on my birthday, I saw Justice Sotomayor And a fun little story about that is I met her afterwards, and I told her it was my birthday, and she gave me a hug, and she said, okay, now we're all going to sing happy birthday for you. And she led a round of happy birthday for me on my birthday. So that was a really cool experience that I know I wouldn't have gotten anywhere else besides the University of Minnesota. We have great sports, although sometimes there's controversy. I've been to the volleyball Final Four the past 2 years. I traveled to Omaha 1 year and Columbus the next. Although we didn't win, I think it's important to talk about how great of sports we do have at the university, even when, you know, some not good news is coming out at other times. We have one of the top institutions in the country. I think we forget that, and it's really important. I really appreciate how far the university has come. You know, I remember, you know, talking with my parents, and they talked about the university being a school that, you know, you could just kind of go to back in the day. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't difficult to get into. It was kind of a fallback school for some people. But now looking at it, I really appreciate the rigor it has, the great faculty, the great research that goes on, because I know that around the country, people know the University of Minnesota as being a great institution. Additionally, I serve on a national board called the Association of Big Ten Students. So I serve with students from across the Big Ten, and we work on more federal level lobbying and initiatives. And frankly, as I got to know them more and hear about their institutions, it only reassured me that the University of Minnesota is the best school in the Big Ten. There's no doubt about that, whether it's the people that we have here, the facilities, being in the metro. I think that those are all great bonuses that we get with the University of Minnesota. And so I want to close out by thanking you for your work, what you've done the past few years for the university, and what I know you will continue to do over the years. I also want to invite you to our Support the U Day, which is coming up in March. We're having a big rally here March 1st, so you'll be hearing more about that. I look forward to coming to more of these meetings. I don't know if I've missed a meeting in the past 2 years of higher ed, so I'm
impressed by that.
Say that again?
I said I'm impressed by that.
Yeah.
Actually, I mean, make yourself known, because I just hadn't have one seat that you go to each time.
So yes, fine. Yes. I've been here longer than some of the representatives have been here. But yeah. I think not quite as long as you have, Chair Nornes.
All right.
But yeah, that will wrap up my testimony. Okay.
Thank you for your comments. And were you at the university your entire higher education life?
Yep. All 4 years.
All 4 years? Okay. My oldest son also graduated from the Carlson Business School.
Yeah.
Very good. Something else I was going to add. Well, good luck with your job, too, by the way.
Thank you.
Any questions from members?
Come on.
Make it a real hard one.
Yeah.
Come on. We've got at least another hour.
Chair.
Representative Christensen.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Donovan, are you ready to row the boat?
I'm so ready to row the boat. I was just over at the Senate higher ed meeting, and they talk about bringing in Coach Fleck to the legislature, and I think, I don't know if we're ready for it yet, so for all the excitement here, but I'm excited for it, and I think all of you will be too.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you again for being here.
Thank you.
And good luck.
Thank you.
Any other business you want to transact? I do have one thing I want to mention before we adjourn. You're all familiar with the regents and the candidates that have been visiting you, I'm sure, for the last few weeks. And for the new members and for those that have been here for a while, too, and I've forgotten, there's a couple of things that we will be doing here shortly. One of them is tonight. There's a forum in this room, actually, at 5 o'clock. We're not involved as a committee in any way other than you're welcome to sit in on that. And following that, there's a reception upstairs in the library. So a chance to, again, see all of the candidates here in one room and hear what they have to say, if you want to attend that. And then our involvement as a committee is on the 7th of February. We'll have a joint committee with the Senate in this room again. And at that time, we will be hearing from all of the candidates and then attempt to make a recommendation to the full convention. And that's basically the highlights, Representative Lena.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is that joint committee hearing going to be at the same regular committee time on the 7th?
No, I didn't get the rest of my notes here. It's at 5:30 on the 7th, so add that to your calendars, and we'll send you a reminder, too. But just so you can plan for that. And it will take a little while since we have a number of candidates, and we'll hear from all of them. And then there's a voting process where we try as hard as we can to advance a slate then to the full convention. The process for some does not end there. If they don't make the slate, they have a chance to be nominated again at the joint convention. There's also an opportunity for some, if they choose and have the support, they could be nominated on the 7th as well. There are a couple of members, or not members, but individuals who have indicated some interest but missed the deadlines as far as application is concerned. So there is a way for them to also be a part of that discussion. So any questions? It's one of our responsibilities. Yes, Representative Fryer.
If there were to be, you're saying there could be some additional individuals that come to the meeting on the 7th to be nominated? Is that what I understand?
It's possible, yes.
Okay, would we...
Would it just be that day that we would find out who they were?
Well, it depends on who they are. I mean, it's up to them to make known their...
But there isn't any rules or anything that says that within 24 hours before the meeting, it just could be that...
No, but they will need to find... In general, they need to be nominated from both sides. I have to clarify this as far as who can nominate.
Mm-hmm.
Can someone help me with that, Mr. Williams?
Chair Norris and Representative Pryor, yes. So they'll need to be nominated by a certain number of members from both the House and the Senate. I don't have I think it's two or three, but I don't have that number immediately available.
But it does require from both sides.
Chair Norris, that's correct, yes.
Okay. So they'll have to have found some people that have been willing to do that. It doesn't happen often, but it is an opportunity if someone chooses to go that way. Mm-hmm. But through the full committee, it's preference. You know, it's the preference way to do it. Mm-hmm. Through the advisory committee. But again, we have other avenues if that doesn't work. So, some cases they've made a decision too late. So anyway, any other questions or comments? There's such a sense of it. It's like we're going to get out to recess. I tell you, the weather isn't that nice, so don't worry about it. But I will let you go early. Our meeting is at